This is where we live.
This past spring semester, I was drugged and raped by a fellow student and coworker from the University of Connecticut. I did not immediately report the incident due to the trauma that I was dealing with. I was extremely confused because I did not understand how someone I considered a friend could do this to me.
That's Erica Daniels, a UConn senior speaking at a press conference where she and six other women filed complaints with the U.S. Department of Education's Civil Rights Division against the university. They're alleging failures on the part of UConn in handling their cases. Among the stories told was that of Kylie Angel, who recounts what happened when she went to campus police after a student found guilty of raping her returned to campus after she thought he had been expelled.
The officer told me, "Women need to stop spreading their legs like peanut butter. A rape is going to keep on happening until the cows come home." Shocked, I left, feeling confused, violated, traumatized, and vulnerable.
2 days later, University President Susan Herbst responded to the complaint.
"It was very difficult this week to hear our UConn police officers painted as uncaring, insensitive, and rude. I completely reject the notion that UConn somehow doesn't care about these all-important issues, because nothing could be further from the truth."
Today, Where We Live, we'll take a closer look at this case and dive back into the issue of sexual violence on college campuses. It was the subject of a big report by the Center for Public Integrity back in 2010. You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive at WNPR.org. You can tweet us at Where We Live. Also, if you go to WNPR.org right now, you can see our show page where we have a statement from the University of Connecticut, which we'll be excerpting a bit on air today. They declined to join us on the program today. We've also reached out to the women who filed this complaint, and we will not be hearing from them during today's program, but we will be hearing from Jacqueline Rabe Thomas, who reports on education and child welfare for the Connecticut Mirror, and she's joined us before, and it's good to see you again, Jackie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, John.
So first of all, why don't you take us through a little bit of a timeline on what we know and what exactly has happened in this case?
So last week on Monday, actually, there was a press conference in Hartford downtown, and seven women came forward and shared their stories. Well, some of the seven women came forward and shared their stories. You just had a few clips of those women. They were former students, current students, and they just had a story to tell, who felt they were wronged by UConn and the way that their assaults were handled by them. They felt they were victims, and then that they were re-victimized by the way that UConn handled their situation.
And we're going to be hearing from a Title IX expert in just a little bit. Maybe you can explain what exactly it is they are alleging and what this complaint actually means against the school.
So every student has the right under Title IX to go to a university without feeling intimidated or feeling like it is a safe place. And when several of these women came to their Title IX office or to university officials to inform them what had taken place, they felt that they weren't served. One student said that she was told that women need to stop being so easy and they need to act more appropriately. Another student was turned away. So it's really raised some red flags for those who are on the outside just hearing these stories of, wow, if this is true, if this is really going on and a widespread issue, even if it's happening to a few students, which these students are alleging it is, it's something that needs to be handled and something that needs to be appropriately addressed.
Reading from a story that you wrote after UConn responded, this is from the police chief, Barbara O'Connor. She says, "Prosecution in these cases is very challenging, noting that the final decision on whether to file charges sits with the state's attorney. She also said that it's often difficult to take action because victims wait before they come forward. If alcohol is involved, she said, it can be difficult to nail down exactly what happened." And then there's this quote, "This is an issue that happens behind closed doors," said Barbara O'Connor. "It's not one that we can police away. It's one we have to educate away." From what you know about this case, Jackie, explain how University of Connecticut police are supposed to handle instances like this, because as we've reported before on the show, In cases of sexual assault, allegations of sexual assault on a college campus, it seems as though there is a different standard of care, for lack of a better word, than there is in the public at large. For instance, what we hear the university police chief saying is, this is an issue of education, something we probably wouldn't be hearing if we were talking about a rape that was alleged on the street in downtown Hartford amongst people who weren't part of a university campus. So I guess I'm wondering if you can talk through what you know about how the university handles this differently than, say, a police force in a city or a town.
I think that comment really goes to prevention and making sure that those on campus, not just women, but those who just make sure you're looking out for your fellow classmates as you're walking around, make sure that you see if someone is acting suspicious, you really look out for them, and making sure that it's prevented and so that you don't have these instances. Now, President Herbst did mention during her 10 minutes of remarks to the Board of Trustees that last week that it's going to happen. It's inevitable. This is something that happens everywhere. It's not unique to UConn, but it is something that is going to happen. And that's where these complaints come in of how it's handled when it has happened. So prevention is one side and handling the reaction to it and helping the victims with the appropriate services is the next step. And I think that's where the victims feel that they were wrong, that they were crying out for help and they were turned away by the very university that they attended.
We're talking with Jacqueline Rabe Thomas, who reports on education for the Connecticut Mirror. You can join us at 860-275-7266. And we'll get to your calls in a moment as we talk about these allegations in the UConn case and also about sexual violence on college campuses across the country. You crunched some of the numbers in a story in the Mirror. And if you want to go to ctmirror.org, you can see documents that Jackie Rabe Thomas put up there. What can you tell us about the number of complaints that have happened over the course of the last few years at the University of Connecticut? Is this something that happens a lot?
So over the last 5 years, calendar years, there's been 55 sexual assault complaints that have been made to the University of Connecticut's police department. Let me start by saying there's two different routes that can be taken with once an assault does take place. Or an alleged assault does take place, they can either go to the police department or it's either handled by the Community Standards Board, which is academic discipline. So there's 55 complaints filed to the police department seeking criminal charges. And then of those, it's unclear how many actually resulted in any charges being filed or anyone being prosecuted. And then on the academic discipline side, there in the last 2 years, there were 43 assaults and 36 sexual advance in comments made in the last two fiscal years alone. So that number is quite different. It seems like it's more people are being, or not being routed, but more people are taking the approach of doing the academic discipline side. And of those people who do seek community standards, there were 12 people who were suspended or expelled during those 2 years.
So without knowing all the numbers about all the sexual assaults in all the world, I mean, do those strike anybody that you're talking to as extraordinarily high or low? It's obviously a very big campus, and I don't think anyone's really all that familiar with the number of complaints like this in the public at large. I guess what I'm asking is, is this number of 55 significant in any particular way when it comes to judging UConn on a culture of sexual violence?
See, that's the thing. It's a really good question that I also am curious about, of where that puts UConn in comparable size towns and cities. UConn is its own city, it's a college town, so it's unclear how that ranks to other similar size towns. There are several places that you could go to look for that. It would be a lot of research, though. So that's the next step, I think.
Well, let me bring in an expert on Title IX. Somebody who follows this stuff pretty closely is Diane Rosenfeld, who's a lecturer in law and women's studies at Harvard University, who joins us by phone today. Diane, welcome to our program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks, John.
I guess, you know, we're going to go through a lot of this with you throughout the course of this program and take some questions from our listeners as well. But I'm wondering if you have any insight into the question that I just asked Jackie Rabe Thomas about whether or not numbers of sexual assault complaints on a college campus like this, the size of UConn, anything that we can draw anything particularly from when we hear that there have been 55 complaints over a certain period of time? Is that meaningful to you? Is there a better way that we can look at what the climate is around sexual assault on a campus like UConn?
Well, numbers are definitely telling when you're evaluating a campus climate, and you want to see high numbers, not because you want to see a lot of sexual assaults, but high numbers usually indicate that reporting mechanisms are working. And then you want to see those numbers not fall off in terms of discipline and action taken in the cases. And you want to see that, like, you want to see exactly what the resolution of the cases is, which you cannot see too much from UConn. It looked like 12 people were suspended or expelled out of all those, out of 55 cases. That's a little low, but it's better than nothing. But another thing to consider here is the president's attitude in saying that rape is inevitable and we're never going to be able to fix it all the way is reflected in these numbers. And you would much rather have a president who says, it's intolerable on our campus and we're going to do everything we possibly can to prevent it. And prevention actually has to do critically with what you do when the cases come forward. So you can educate and do really great prevention education programs, but you have to hold offenders accountable. That's part of the prevention. Because of the feedback loop among students, they know whether they're going to be protected or not on a campus, and that's going to affect reporting. So they feel like if they've been assaulted and they know that either nothing is going to happen or they'll be insulted and re-traumatized, as alleged by the 7 complainants in the recent case at UConn, they're much less likely to come forward and try to do anything about it. And then you have a perpetuation of, you know, what many people, including myself, call a rape culture.
When you mention those numbers, for instance, to your point, when you mention those numbers of how many students had been expelled, one of the students who had been formally expelled was the one who was being referred to by Kylie Angel in her story, essentially someone who was found guilty of the charges that she leveled against him. He was expelled from campus, but then he appealed and he ended up again back on campus. So I guess one piece of this is just how seriously does a university, UConn or any other university, take the idea of expulsion. Obviously, there's due process, and we need to make sure that everyone is treated fairly. But Diane Rosenfeld, at the end of the day, if someone is told that their perpetrator is expelled and then they show up back on campus, I assume that that's a problem, something that most college campuses wouldn't or shouldn't tolerate.
I agree that they definitely should not tolerate that. I won't paint UConn with an entirely broad brush and indict the whole university because of that case, but that case is a very serious case, and it shows a real disregard for the traumatic experience of the victim who came forward. And what I mean by this is that it might be that the administrators who decided that they would grant his appeal and somehow it wasn't so important to have told Kylie that her her perpetrator who had been found responsible was now going to be back on campus, maybe because it wasn't a big thing, that is so incredibly traumatizing. And it affects her entire ability to access her equal rights to educational opportunities that she is guaranteed under Title IX.
And we're going to talk about what those rights are a bit more in the program. And you're going to join us, 860-275-7266. A quick call here from Nancy, who's calling from Ashford. Hello, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I just wanted to make the point that people should realize that faculty members are subject to some of these same risks. I was a faculty member on the UConn staff, and several of my fellow professors, I was the first female in the department, and several of my fellow professors would essentially assault me. They never got as far as rape because I fought them off. But when I complained to the department chairman, he said, and you'll have to believe this, I expect, that assistant professors would have to be pimped.
Well, and Nancy, I apologize. I don't want to have to bleep anything because there's certain words that we cannot use, and I don't know what you're going to say. I appreciate your phone call very much, and I appreciate your story and for coming forward and talking with us. And perhaps before we get back to Diane Rosenfeld, I will give out the phone number one more time, 860-275-7266. If you are part of the UConn faculty or a UConn student, we would love to hear from you what you think about this case. Jackie Reed Thomas, before I let you go, obviously this has drawn the attention of the governor and it's drawn the attention of state lawmakers. What do we know about potential hearings looking into these issues?
So late last week, both the governor and the Republican leaders and Democratic leaders all called for public hearings. It's something that UConn officials support. They said, you know, we want to get in front of this. We want to make sure that the policies are being adhered to. There was a new law that was passed back in 2012 that really ramps up reporting and making sure that plans are in place for these victims and for making sure that they're handled appropriately. But as one lawmaker told me, that policies are only as good as they're followed.
It sounded to me, last thing for you, Jackie, that the governor was kind of upset. The governor was kind of angry about this, and it seems as though this is something that's risen to the level of something he cares about and wants to do something about.
Yes, his wife was a former – she was in this profession for a while. She helped rape victims. His comment was, one of the most basic responsibilities of our institutions of higher education is to keep our young people safe. If they have failed in that responsibility in any way, or any victim of sexual assault has been treated with anything but the utmost respect, I will be outraged.
And that's a quote from Governor Daniel Malloy. So we'll see what the governor and lawmakers do moving forward in this case. Jacqueline Rabe Thomas covers education and child welfare issues for the Connecticut Mirror. You can read her reporting on this and other issues at ctmirror.org. Jackie, good to see you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
When we come back from our break, we'll continue our conversation with Diane Rosenfeld from Harvard University, who's a lecturer in law and women's studies. And we'll also be talking more about a 2010 report by the Center for Public Integrity about this very issue of sexual violence on college campuses, not just in Connecticut, but nationwide. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about allegations of sexual violence on the campus of the University of Connecticut, a Title IX complaint filed by seven women last week. And we're talking about that story, but also about the broader issue of sexual violence on college campuses, something that's the center of a Center for Public Integrity report from 2010 that we reported on back at the time. We're going to be revisiting that report and what it can tell us. 860-275-7266 is the phone number if you want to join our conversation. We're joined on the phone by Diane Rosenfeld, who's a lecturer in law and women's studies at Harvard University. A quick call here from Paul, who's calling from Hartford. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
If it was acknowledged that the officer who made that comment about spreading their legs like peanut butter, it was acknowledged that that's very insensitive. And I wonder, does a person like that, who is obviously not fit for the job, does he get to keep his job?
Well, and Paul, I thank you very much for your question. I wanted to take that. Jackie Rabe Thomas just left us after the first segment, but I can say, according to reporting that she's done and reporting that I've read from others, is that that officer was approached, and he says he did not remember saying that. And as far as I know right now, that is where that story stands. So as far as any disciplinary action, we don't know anything about that, but that's the response from the officer. Thank you very much for the question. Nicole is calling from Middletown. Hi, Nicole. Nicole, are you there? Nicole, are you there? I'm going to put Nicole on hold, and hopefully we can get back to her. Diane Rosenfeld, why don't we just give a little bit of a background for our listeners? When we talk about a complaint under Title IX, what exactly is it that we're talking about?
You're talking about a civil rights violation. So Title IX is mostly thought of by people as having to do with athletics and athletic equality, but actually Title IX was an amendment passed in 1972 to the Civil Rights Act that opened the doors of schools to women. So it was really just all about equal access to educational opportunity. And as it developed through the years, when we realized that many women who were in an academic context were being harassed or violated in some way, it's also about the recognition that sexual harassment or sexual assault interferes with your access to educational opportunities. So if a school is on notice that a hostile environment has been created, that school has a very clear obligation under Title IX to investigate and remediate and eliminate that hostile environment so that women and men are on an equal playing field at school. It's very, very important to remember that Title IX gives you a civil rights context. So it's a whole different set of legal rights that you have as compared to the criminal justice system. So a rape on campus is one act of sexual assault is so severe in itself that it's considered to have constituted a hostile environment. So it doesn't have to be an ongoing thing as a sexual harassment case might have to be. So the same act of sexual assault can give rise clearly to a criminal case, but also it definitely gives rise to a civil rights case at school.
I want to make sure that I understand exactly how this works on college campuses, though. As we were talking earlier in the program about this system by which a student would go to the campus police and make a complaint, this is significantly different than how it is handled in what we'll call the rest of the world. From what you've seen, Diane Rosenfeld, does this system work? I mean, in American society today, it is very difficult for a lot of people to make an accusation of rape in a regular police setting. But on college campuses, it seems to be fraught with a layer of other problems. Does this system that we've essentially set up on college campuses work as far as you're concerned?
I think that's a great question. At this point, we're at a tipping point of unprecedented student activism in addition to a new federal law that will go into effect in March of 2014 called the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act, otherwise known as the Campus Save Act, that will actually really get schools to step up and make effective systems. So schools can have very effective systems in this regard, but most of them don't.
We're going to take some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266, but I do want to say that in this case, we did ask the University of Connecticut to respond, and we invited them on the program. We did get a response in written form from Stephanie Reitz, who's a spokesperson for the university. In part, it reads, UConn appreciates the invitation to participate this morning, but the federal mandate to protect most student information makes it necessary to be extremely circumspect in all discussions regarding these allegations. Those protections, which can be waived only by the students themselves, limit UConn's ability to respond directly in any substantive way, particularly since the allegations are the subject of a federal complaint currently under review. Participating in a live radio discussion with hosts or callers about particular allegations would be neither constructive nor honor our students' privacy rights. That being said, the statement reads, let us emphasize that UConn prioritizes students' safety above all else. We are proud of the strength of our policies and procedures relating to sexual assault prevention and awareness and of the services available to victims of sexual violence or harassment. The statement goes on, and we have that entire statement on our website, WNPR.org, right now. Let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Bethel. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I graduated from UConn in 1991. And while I was a student there, I took part in a couple of different Take Back the Night sort of events. One of them was a viewing of the accused. And even back then, back in 1989, I went with a couple of friends. And I looked around the theater, and I couldn't help but think how sad it was that everyone in the theater was a woman for the most part. And, you know, that led me to think, you know, why isn't there something in place, or perhaps there is, and perhaps this is my question, where young men who are attending the university, freshmen or transferring students, why aren't they required to have some sensitivity training about these things? Why aren't they sitting in theaters watching the accused and then having discussions about it? Because, you know, as I continued through my years at UConn, there were definitely situations, not anything that I was ever involved in. I was certainly never assaulted myself, but there were definitely situations where, you know, packs or groups of young men were, you know, putting girls in situations that were incredibly precarious. And I think that a lot of that pack sort of mentality could be prevented if there was some training involved and sensitivity training, so to speak, for young men. So I guess that's my question. Have things like that been tried in other universities? Is that something that UConn should step up and promote, because I'm telling you, I'm very disappointed in UConn's leadership and in whatever the particular police officers that were involved, that this many years later, I'm hearing these stories about the university that I attended.
Barbara, thank you very much. And again, the Accused is a film with Jodie Foster that is about a rape and the aftermath of that rape. And again, if you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Diane Rosenfeld, you heard Barbara's question. Any thoughts about how universities are handling this from the standpoint of educating a young male population?
Sure. The Campus Save Act that I just mentioned actually really clearly requires mandatory preventative education in two different types. And one is preventative education, which is aimed at men, because as my colleague Jackson Katz says, only men can prevent rape, since men commit 99% of rape, and risk reduction techniques for women, which is not the same as prevention and not to blame anybody. It is never somebody's fault if she or he gets raped. So it's a very good question, and it's incredibly timely and heartbreaking to think about that, yes, this was a huge problem in 91 and 92, and the pack mentality that Barbara spoke as is evident in cases like Steubenville and Merrillville with this young high school student, Daisy Coleman, and this kind of multi-perpetrator sexual assault that usually happens, that often involves athletes, is incredibly problematic, very evident in recent wave of Title IX cases, and I mean private Title IX cases where universities have had to pay millions of dollars to survivors who were raped by members of football teams or such, where the university failed to take notice of actions that indicated that sexual assault was really likely and didn't do anything to hold the football player responsible. And then, you know, surprisingly, the football player raped someone, or there's a gang rape at a party or some event. This is a fact pattern that I see repeating and repeating and repeating. And it's not just sensitivity training that these men need, but they need a whole culture shift. They need to know, their coaches need to tell them that you don't call someone a pussy, that the way to, you know, the way to get your team activated is not to call them women and not to constantly refer to women in derogatory ways. And we see this in a whole campus culture, and whole, you know, our social culture and our popular culture reflects this as well. But campuses are in a great position to exert their leadership that should come from the president. We haven't seen it really at UConn. But where they're really shaping the campus culture and saying, look, we're UConn, and our women's basketball team is, you know, the best in the country, and we need to really pay attention to our sexual culture at campus. This is how Yale got in trouble, by not paying attention at all to its sexual culture and saying, well, we can't do anything about this. The Yale case I'm referring to was initiated. I represent the students who filed the complaint at Yale. And that happened after fraternity pledges surrounded the dorm on old campus where many of the freshman girls lived at night, chanting, no means yes, yes means anal, and other horrible things. And that's very significant of a very toxic sexual culture on campus. And presidents have a huge role to play in setting the tone for that culture.
And again, one of the keys to this, and we've spoken about this on the program before, is that in that case, it wasn't about, as in this UConn case, specific cases of rape or sexual assault. It was strictly about campus culture, and it brought this very serious investigation down on Yale University. That is a very different thing than what we're talking about here. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266, as we talk about the culture of campuses, I want to bring in Leslie Bell, who's a psychotherapist and sociologist, author of Hard to Get, 20-Something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. Leslie, thank you very much for joining us here on Where We Live. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm wondering, and you were just listening to Diane Rosenfeld, I'm wondering if you can just pick up on this idea of the culture on campuses, because one of the things we heard from the university president was that this is something that happens across the country, and that's not to excuse what's happening on the University of Connecticut campus, but it does seem to be a problem all over America. What do you see is behind this, Leslie?
It absolutely is. You know, UConn is not alone, but I also do agree absolutely with Diane that university presidents have an amazing sort of capacity and potential to make changes on university campuses. It's not happening to the degree that I'd like to see happening, but they certainly have that potential. What I see happening, I mean, you know, so I don't have the legal background. I'm a psychotherapist. I see a lot of denial, both by university administrators and by kind of campus culture and individuals, about the prevalence of sexual assault. And I see that as behind as one of the factors that's behind the kind of inability to act, despite all that we know about prevalence. There's still this wish that we have collectively and individually to think about people who perpetrate sexual assault as strangers, as unfamiliar. And if that really were true, I think we'd see universities responding very differently. But the fact of the matter is that on a campus and in general in society, rapes are predominantly perpetrated by people known to the survivor and the victim. And that makes us very uncomfortable, both collectively and individually. We sort of want to have people in these categories of who's dangerous and who's safe, but there's really not a clear way to know those things. And it makes it very difficult for institutions, I think, to acknowledge something happening with people who live right next to us, and for individuals to acknowledge that as well. That's sort of one piece of the prevalence, but it's one that I see from my perspective as a psychologist when I see people come in and have a hard time. You know, it's very common for people not to report. It's much more common for people not to tell someone and not to report than it is to report. These young women who are reporting are in the absolute minority, and I commend them and applaud them for doing what they're doing, but it's not the norm, actually, to be public about what's going on.
Which is why we often see some of these reports coming in years after the actual action takes place. Let's go to some phone calls here, and I know we wanted to get Middletown's Nicole here. We tried you on the line before, Nicole. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm a UConn student currently, and I have known women on campus who have been sexually assaulted and have not reported their cases just because there's a great feeling that the police won't either act at all or won't listen to women who are reporting. And I think that is a big thing that needs changing, but also the fact that a lot of men aren't being held responsible and aren't being taught the right way of how to be sensitive to these types of situations.
Nicole, can I just ask you quickly, what do you think would help? I mean, obviously, yes, you need to have police that are more sensitive, but is there something that you could prescribe that would make the situation better on the campus of the University of Connecticut?
I think it honestly boils a lot down to athletes and a lot of the standards that they are held to, just because they are so idolized at our college. And if they were held more responsible, not for cases like this alone, but just in general, then it would show that we take these situations much more seriously.
Thank you, Nicole, very much for your phone call. I want to get to Jane, who's calling from Storrs, where the University of Connecticut is. Jane, hi. You're on Where We Live.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that as a faculty member who cares very deeply, a faculty member at UConn who cares very deeply about her students, I really find the president's statement that there always will be rape unacceptable. I think the message needs to be clear, and it needs to be zero tolerance.
Jane, thank you very much for that.
Can I hop in here for a minute?
Please, go ahead.
Okay. So a couple quick things. First, Nicole, it would be great if you would talk to the Office for Civil Rights about what you just said, because as they come in to investigate what the culture is like at UConn, they definitely want to be hearing from people like you about perceptions of how the cases will be handled, because that's very important to the overall case. And I also needed to correct, John, that the Yale case also did involve very much how Yale failed to handle appropriately complaints of sexual assault. So those are all very private, and we can't talk about those. But the several
highly public, toxic incidents were part of the background for the complaint, but not the complaint in itself.
Not the complaint in itself. I apologize for that.
Right. No worries at all. And then as I think about this, I think that President Herbst really needs to, like, take a couple steps back and reapproach her entire thinking about this problem. And instead of being this us versus them in this very defensive posture, she needs to, like, open up and shut down classes for a day and have a real listening session with the students, with all the students, and she really has to figure out how to get her arms around this situation and to stop alienating students the way that I currently perceive her as doing through her statements. She's got a problem on her hands. Rape is not inevitable. It's possible that we can't completely stop it, but there is so much that a school can do, and I advise her respectfully to really start doing her homework on figuring out what they need to be doing much, much better.
And I want to thank Jane for her phone call here. I want to get to one quick note before we take our break. This is from an AP report, and this answers hopefully a question that Paul had earlier on the program. UConn Police Chief Barbara O'Connor said there are no criminal or internal affairs investigations underway related to the civil rights complaint, which includes an allegation that a female police officer told one of the victims, women need to stop spreading their legs like peanut butter or rape is going to keep happening until the cows come home. She said, and this is Barbara O'Connor said, that officer has no memory of making that statement. She said that students should immediately report incidents. We would institute an internal affairs investigation, and we wanted to address it, O'Connor said. So, again, earlier I misspoke and said it was a male officer. It was a female officer in that particular instance. We're going to take a break.
My understanding also was that it was a female officer and that she's no longer there. And I would just point out how passive that language is, that rape will still keep happening. And that goes back to the other point from the student from Barbara about we don't focus on the people who are perpetrating the rapes. We focus on that rape happens and there's nothing we can do. Rape is happening somehow. We need to do something about it.
When we come back from our break, we want to talk a little bit more about what role alcohol, if it does or does not play on college campuses. We have an email question to that particular issue. And we want to take more of your emails. Where We Live at WNPR, tweets at Where We Live, and also you can call us 860-275-7266. And this is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse, and we'll have a lot on our table, including a Hartford scandal that has turned into yet another dispute over freedom of information. It seems as though there's a lot of secrecy these days. It's one of the stories we'll be covering tomorrow on The Wheelhouse. I hope you can join us on air and also on WNPR.org. Today, we're talking about sexual assault on college campuses after a complaint filed by seven women against the University of Connecticut. We're talking on the phone with Diane Rosenfeld, who's a lecturer in law and women's studies at Harvard University and a Title IX expert. Leslie Bell is a psychotherapist and sociologist whose book is Hard to Get, 20-something Women and the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. We're taking your phone calls at 860-275-7266, and there's a lot to get to. Brandon is in Guilford. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, how you doing today?
Doing well. What's up?
As somebody who graduated college and was an athlete in college, I guess what I wanted to kind of bring up was the other side of this thing, and what about all the women, how they dress at these colleges? I went to Arizona State, so I know it's a little bit different than, you know, something like a UConn. But, I mean, there was, you know, people showing up, you know, with, you know, bikinis on in school, and then, you know, afterwards, say, you know, the Devils would have won a game or something like that. You go to these parties, and there was so much alcohol and drugs involved, and there was so much going on that these, you know, women would almost be throwing themselves, you know, whether it was inadvertent, you know, is not for me to decide. But I just think that there's a whole nother side to this thing that, you know, we really need to get down to if we are going to stop this kind of stuff from happening in colleges.
Well, Brandon, before I let you go, and thank you for your phone call. I'm sure Diane Rosenfeld or Leslie Bell might want to jump in, but let me just ask you a question. What does how a woman dresses have anything to do with whether or not she would be raped? I mean, how could that possibly align in your mind? I guess I'm trying to figure that out.
Okay. I guess from what I'm trying to think how to put this. I guess if I was to see some, you know, a woman that came in, you know, dressed in you know, a normal clothes rather than coming into a college classroom in, you know, a bathing suit. I just feel like it's more inviting to somebody if, you know, you see somebody come into a classroom in some sort of a bathing suit instead of actual clothes.
Brandon, thank you very much for your phone call. Leslie Bell, you want to jump in?
I mean, I'm really happy to hear this perspective articulated, and I appreciate the, kind of the genuine curiosity that the caller has for this, and I think it is reflective of our, you know, cultural confusion and our lack of understanding about what dress means, and what desire and consent mean, right? It still is perceived as to dress in a particular way implies consent. To act in a particular way implies consent. And I really agree with the earlier caller about our need to, you know, focus on rape prevention, not just from, absolutely not from the perspective of, you know, women need to take self-defense classes. It really needs to be both men and women learning about consent and desire and what yes means and how to kind of understand that in another person, and have empathy for people and think about them as other, you know, actual agents of what it is that they want, as opposed to dress a particular way or even act a particular way. To act flirty is not to invite sexual activity. It may be, but you need to kind of confirm that with the person. So I can certainly see, you know, and this young man articulates, I think, a lot of confusion that men feel. You know, what am I supposed to do with this? How do I respond to this? And we can do a lot to help men and women to navigate this. They're figuring out how to be sexual beings and how to interact with one another. But never, you know, as you suggested, John, never does what one wears indicate anything about one's availability or interest. It's an expression, but it doesn't say anything about consent.
Go ahead, Diane, quickly. I'd want to get you in. Yeah.
Yes, I could talk for a long time about this, but I'm going to just treat it as a teaching moment. Nothing, like Leslie just said, you might think that dress implies consent. Nothing implies consent except consent, like conscious, active, enthusiastic consent. So a teaching moment is critically needed, especially in these situations, for people like Brandon to get them straight on thinking, you know, what's a woman's right to just go to a party and have fun? It doesn't mean that she wants to get raped. And I just want to note that ASU was successfully sued under Title IX and had to pay $850,000 in settlement of one of these complaints, and it involved a football player.
We got an email from Juliana in West Hartford. I wanted to bring up something else that we wanted to get to here, who writes, "This isn't a matter of young women drinking too much and sending mixed signals. Many men who perpetrate these attacks are serial predators who take advantage of the binge drinking culture." Leslie Bell, very quickly, I guess I just need to ask you to respond to this, because this comes up quite often, that there is this culture on college campuses, not just in the University of Connecticut, that involves quite a bit of drinking, and as our earlier caller said, also drug use, that some say plays into all this. What role do you think that alcohol on college campuses plays?
Oh, it plays a huge role, you know, which is in no way to blame women themselves or to say that women are responsible for this, but over-drinking to the point where, you know, you don't have, literally, you're not either, you know, to the point of being unconscious or to the point of having your judgment diminished, your capacity to speak diminished, plays a huge role in this. And it inhibits people on both sides, right, both men and women, makes people much less likely to be able to have discussions that involve actual consent. Again, which is not to excuse things in any way, but it plays a huge role in about 90, you know, these are all estimates, we can't know for certain, but what we, you know, can estimate is that in about 90% of cases, alcohol is involved in incidents of sexual assault. And it's not to say that it wouldn't exist without sexual assault, but it is certainly made more, I think, more prevalent by the incidence of alcohol, not just small amounts of alcohol, but large amounts of alcohol.
There are a few more people who want to join us here, and we're running low on time.
Can I make one quick reference?
So
everything Leslie said is completely correct, and kind of connecting the dots there is that serial rapists, so research shows that it's not many men who commit rape, but it's that the ones who do it over and over again. And alcohol is used as a weapon to make women vulnerable and then to rape them, as we saw in the Steubenville case.
Well, I guess I'm wondering then, Diane, very, very quickly, could you just address a tweet that we got from Doug here that says, campus turns over 100% every 3 to 5 years. Can you change the culture of a transient population? A few new predators arrive each year. If you're talking about a few predators who prey on young women, you do get into a large campus population, some people each and every year who may do this. I mean, what do we do about that? Is that part of campus culture? Is that a reality of life?
I think it's very much part of a culture change that needs to happen, where there is mandatory education and where people are taught bystander intervention. You really can hold these guys responsible. Impunity is a big thing that socially confirms that it's okay for them to behave in these predatory ways. And it's not that they just start the predation when they take a woman to their room who's drunk and they rape her. It starts way before that, and it starts with jokes and with disparaging comments about women and constantly objectifying women or rating women, or, you know, a lot of the male bonding behavior that we see that's very derogatory towards women. So that's cultural. That can be interrupted, and that's one place to start.
Let's go to some phone calls here quickly. Miles is on the line. Hi, Miles. Go ahead. Miles, are you there?
Yep.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, so first of all, I'm a student at UConn, and yep. I'm a campus correspondent for the Daily Campus, the newspaper here. And I'm currently doing a story about how the president's task force on civility and campus culture is conducting a survey for students to provide responses or opinions on the matter. And they sent out an email actually yesterday to all students to seek responses, and they have until November 22nd to do that.
And what sort of questions are they asking?
They just want to get feedback in general, you know, about sexual violence on campus. You know, they're just looking for students' opinions in general and on certain issues evolving around that situation.
Obviously, Miles, if you're a reporter on campus, you're talking to an awful lot of people. What are you hearing? What is the mood on campus from the people you're talking to about this issue?
Well, from the people I've been talking to in the past few days, it seems like students are really upset, mainly about how President Herbst has responded to this issue. That's what, you know, overall, obviously people don't support it at all. And they're very upset as to how the university has taken a stance in sort of, you know, defending the university over setting and protecting the students that were sexually assaulted.
Miles, thank you very much, and good luck on your reporting. I appreciate it. Tommy's in Danbury. Tommy, just have about 30 seconds or so. I apologize, but go ahead.
Oh, not a problem.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm here. How are you today? As I said, I'm I'm a father of a UConn student, and one thing I think that may have to be addressed is how they can get either a forum out or a group that makes these young men understand that what they're doing now is really going to affect how they're going to be as adults in the future. But how do you take these guys and make them understand that the mind frame of how would it be if the tables were turned, if they were sexually assaulted by, you know, a group? I don't care if it's a group of men, women, X, Y, and Z. They have to understand how traumatic that is and how scarring it is to just a person, an individual, and in respect to women, for women exclusively, because it's unfortunately, it seems like it's the majority of where the assaults are happening.
Well, and Tommy, we're going to have to leave it there, and I appreciate your phone call. There's obviously a lot more we can talk about in this very, very difficult conversation. If you go to WNPR.org and go to our show page today, you can see the statement that the University of Connecticut put out, and we also have more from our show back in 2011 about very important report that came out from the Center for Public Integrity about this issue nationwide. Diane Rosenfeld joined us today. She's from Law and Women's Studies at Harvard University. Leslie Bell's book is Hard to Get, 20-something Women in the Paradox of Sexual Freedom. Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Betsy Kaplan and Heather Brandon. Thanks to Garrett Connolly. The senior producer is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.